I think it's interesting in our culture, you know, in this materialist culture that we live in, you know, when we think of addiction, we think of a person, you know, we think of this quality that some of us might have in relation to some things, and often it's in relation to strong objects like heroin or cigarettes, or they're the usual things, aren't they? Or, you know, alcohol or something like that, some very quite strong object that we see as harmful to us, harmful to our body, harmful to our life. We tend to think of addiction in these terms. Now we're sort of more broadly, people are looking at their minds and seeing, you know, if you're a bit obsessed with anything, we can say that's addiction. And now it's interesting. If we look at Buddha's mind, Buddha's psychology, Buddha's model of the mind, the way Buddha talks about the mind, and very much what Buddha is talking about is the mind. What a Buddhist is doing is working on their mind. As Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, the workshop is in the mind. This is truly what we're doing as a Buddhist. Then this one of addiction is interesting. There's not a term, there's no equivalent term, let's say, in Tibetan for that word. But the term, which we also all know in the West, but which we use in a very different way, the one that's the meaning of that is the simple word attachment. Now, of course, in this room, every one of us would have a different understanding of this, you know, attachment. And we even mostly would think of it as something fairly good. We talk about attachment for our children, attachment to, you know, we can also think of it, so we tend to think of it as a good quality. But the way Buddha would talk about it is as necessarily a negative quality, not the way we think of attachment, but the way he'd talk about it. And essentially what attachment is simply addiction. So you could say addiction is an intense level of attachment, that's all. An intense level of attachment. So in a sense, Buddha's saying, what Buddha would say is attachment is a fundamental problem we all have and is actually the source of most of our suffering in day to day. Now, even if we think again in normal terms about addiction, we don't think like that. We would think, you know, that's just one problem isolated. And then we have another problem maybe called jealousy, and we have another one called anger. But we would never think of them as all related, you know. But what's interesting about Buddhist model of the mind, all these unhappy emotions that we have, they all have a direct relationship to this thing called attachment. There's a very clear way of understanding how they're all linked to attachment. Which is, you know, as I said, would be surprising how we think about it. So basically what Buddha's saying is we're all addicts, but it's just a question of degree. You know, it's an interesting way to understand the meaning of attachment. So when we understand, let's say, attachment to cigarettes, I mean, when I was, you know, smoking cigarettes, when I was really neurotic about it, I was smoking like 80 cigarettes a day, Marlboros, I remember. Until I became a hippie, and then I rolled my own, and then I... and I smoked in between the marijuana, you know. But, you know, when we think of that addiction, if we understand addiction, we understand what Buddha means by attachment. So then, what is addiction then? Well, we know, when I was addicted to my 80 cigarettes a day, it's obvious the symptoms of addiction. Well, one symptom is that you absolutely feel you need to have it in order to be happy in your life, isn't it? You're dependent upon it. That's a simple word, isn't it? Dependence upon something. So clearly a person who's addicted to cigarettes is dependent upon their cigarettes. And what does that mean? That means that if you don't have them, you're miserable. Isn't it? This is the meaning. This is what it is. So we can see, you know, and there's obviously much more intense levels of it where the suffering if you don't get your fix or the suffering if you don't have your glass of alcohol is in quite intense suffering, isn't it? But that's the meaning of addiction, that you're dependent upon having it. And that it's extreme suffering, or it's suffering to whatever degree when you don't have it. Well, this is exactly the way to understand what Buddha means by attachment. But first of all, he talks about attachment, this addiction, if you like, attachment, this addiction mind, attachment. He talks about it going to extremely subtle levels. And second, it can be for anything you like, you know. So if we look into our life, what we would consider normal, let's say, ordinary life, normal. You know, oh, I'm not a junkie, I'm not an addict, that's a person over there. But I'm a normal person, so I have food and friends and a job and people who like me and all this. Now, the Buddha would say if we begin to really look into our minds, we're going to see that we have attachment. We're addicted to people liking us. We're addicted to our food. We're addicted to things being the way we want them to be. We're addicted to being seen as an important person. We're addicted. I mean, you look at every aspect of our life. Well, then we are addicted. The word he would use is attached, you know. So if you understand the word addiction, you understand the word attachment for the way Buddha talks about it. Clearly, it's not the way we talk about it ourselves, you know. We wouldn't say we're addicted to our, you know, we wouldn't think like that. We wouldn't say we're addicted to our, you know, our lover, addicted to our husband or something. But clearly, if we start to analyze it, we will see, you know, what we are totally addicted to is that person treating me in a certain way, liking me a certain way, even more fundamentally, having that person in my life. In other words, the lack of a person in my life would mean that I'm just a nothing person, you know. So then we can see also one of the symptoms, one of the byproducts of addiction is manipulation. Another one is expectation. The more you need something to be in your life, the more you manipulate to get it, don't you? And also, the more you need something in your life, the more you're going to expect it to be this way. So this whole business, we talk about expectations. All these expectations, you know, manipulation, they're all, these are symptoms, is a way of putting it in Buddhist terms. They are symptoms of this chronic disease that Buddha would say we all have, that in fact is the source, that almost the basis of all the suffering we have from day to day. For example, we would very rarely think of anger being having much to do with addiction. But as one Lama put it, anger is the response when attachment doesn't get what it wants. So in other words, we manipulate to get something and don't get it. Even if it's just the light being green when I want it, please. Then what will be the response? Annoyance, irritation, anger, you know. So that expectation even, that the light be green when I get there, you can say that's attachment. Okay, it sounds ridiculous to call it addiction, because we have a very precise way of meaning addiction. But that's the meaning. If you get an understanding of addiction, this neediness, in other words, this lovely Western word, neediness. Oh my God, he's so needy, we'll say. Now, we mightn't say he's an addict, but that's the meaning of attachment. This neediness for a person, this neediness for someone to like me. The need to have someone and something a certain way. We're attached, wouldn't call yourself a junkie if you're very, you know, like if you want things to be done a certain way in your job. But that's the meaning of attachment. And you check what happens when it's not, you get angry. Well, that indicates you have attachment to something being a certain way, meaning addicted to it. You're dependent upon it being that way for your happiness, you know. So this is the way to understand it. Now, Buddha says we have the potential, all of us, to be extraordinarily happy, content, fulfilled human beings. Simply speaking, this is what he says. In fact, the potential for this that we possess, according to him, is way beyond, actually, the way we would tend to think of this potential in our ordinary life. In fact, what Buddha says would be, actually, we have the potential to be completely free of addiction, free of attachment, of neediness, of expectation, of all these, therefore all the problems that come from it. This is what Buddha would even mean by this word nirvana. Simply speaking, it's a word that refers to freedom from suffering, which is a bit of an abstract concept. We don't talk like that. We don't keep walking around looking, oh, I'm trying to be free of suffering. We don't talk this way. But this term nirvana means the actual state of having accomplished freedom from suffering. So freedom, you know, freedom from being miserable, freedom from suffering. And the person who has accomplished this, simply speaking, in day-to-day life, is a person who would have no attachment, would therefore definitely not have anger. And all the others that are variations and offshoots of these, this is the way Buddha talks about it, there certainly would be no jealousy. There's no way there'd be any depression. There's no way there'd be any stress. Because all of these are offshoots or branches, you know, of this fundamental one, almost this default mode of ours, which Buddha would call attachment, you know. So by understanding addiction, and that's a very clear one for us, that gives us the best way to understand attachment. Just that it's for everything in our life, that's all, you know. What we would consider normal, Buddha would say, is a level of addiction, you know. Because, and I think we can prove this to ourselves pretty quickly. Because by looking in your own daily life, you know, the smallest thing goes wrong. Meaning, the smallest thing, you know, you don't get the smallest thing you want. The green light, the cup of tea the way you like it, the person's smiling at you at the time you want them to smile at you, you know. We can see it's the smallest thing can throw us. All of these are signs of attachment. This addiction, if you like, it sounds strange to say it this way, but that's the best way to understand the word attachment, you know. So in other words, to talk about it in a subtler way, in a deeper way, it is this, it's like a constant neediness that's there. It's a way we even define ourselves, you know. It's this constant neediness that projects itself onto everything in our daily lives. The family, the job, you know, clothes we have, the car we have, the way we do things. It's something that goes to the deepest levels of our being. So this is where it's what's hard to see. It's easy in our ordinary way, like I said, certain activities, their addictions over there. And as I said, usually in our culture, we define them according to the severity of the object. So if we're hugely addicted to something that doesn't harm our body, we don't think it was addiction at all, you know. But the real meaning of addiction in terms of suffering, as far as Buddha is concerned, is that it's harmful to our minds. This is what our suffering, our emotional, mental suffering is coming from. Not just harming our bodies. It's harming our minds. This is the one. So clearly it harms your body too, if the object is called alcohol. That's clear. You know. And clearly, if it's addiction to food too, it's going to harm our body eventually. That's for sure. We can see that all the time. But it's much harder for us to see how addiction to a person, addiction to being, you know, it can be harmful to us because we just think of it as normal life. But it's so obvious if we think about it, if we look at the suffering we all have, the depression we have, the jealousy, the fears, the anxiety, the stress, the low self-esteem. All of these, according to Buddha, are symptoms, are results of, if you like, putting it this way, of attachment, of this primordial neediness that seems to be in the bones of our being, you know. So on the one hand, it seems easy to understand it, but actually it's extremely difficult. And it's also difficult for us to understand it because I think we have such different understandings of this word attachment. Most of us use it, in this room, most of us would use it interchangeably with the word love, you know. Like when we say we're very attached to our children, and then we hear the Buddha says you shouldn't be attached and it causes you suffering, and it sounds quite shocking. What am I supposed to do? Chuck them out, you know? Or as Lama Zopa would say, you know, that when we hear the Buddha says that we can only be happy when we give up attachment, we think, oh, I have to give up my heart, give up my happiness. Because we think of attachment as happiness, or we think of it as the cause of happiness, or we think of it as love, or even liking something, you know. When we say, oh, I'm so attached to chocolate cake, we think of it as the same as saying, I like chocolate cake. So, of course, we hear that Buddha says it's a disease. Well, of course, then we all get a bit fundamentalist and puritanical, you know. Oh, I've got to give up chocolate cake, you mean. It's not the understanding at all. But when we say you're addicted to chocolate cake, then you get it straight away, don't you? There's no problem. Well, that's the meaning of attachment. In other words, it's the neediness for something to be there when you want it, such that if you don't get it, you'll be miserable. We understand that. Well, that's what Buddha says is the disease of all of us. Join the human race, you know. And it's the source of, virtually the source of our suffering from day to day. It's the reason we have anger or jealousy or depression. That's what's interesting. And to see that relationship is extremely important. I mean, even things like all these different letters we have. What are they? Or ADD, all these different, there's so many names of them now. And there's all these variations of that one, isn't it? Attention deficit, all these things. They're just variations of attachment, you know. Because another one of the symptoms of attachment, another one of the ways that attachment functions for us, is an extremely overexcited, busy, busy mind. So when we think of a kid, or an adult for that matter, who's ADD, you know, we can see, completely busy mind, and you forget what you're doing. You wander off here, and you wander off there. That's the direct result of attachment. Attachment is one of the simple, attachment energy, if you like, put it like that way, you know, is lots and lots of thoughts. Many, 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 many thoughts, you know. No control over the thoughts. We talk about bipolar. We talk about manic depression. When you're on the up mode, it's the overexcited mind, isn't it? Where you think you're God and you can fly off the mountain. That's the extreme level of it. But the ordinary day-to-day level, you can almost, again, not without, you know, without joking, you could say Buddha's saying we're all bipolar. It's just a question of degree, again. Because the up mode is the overexcited one, isn't it? All the overexcited, excited thoughts. And where everything feels just fantastic and amazing. We have that all the time. And then what happens when the bubble bursts? Crashing down to the other side of the bipolar, which is like the flip side of it, you know, depressed, dark, miserable, hopeless. That's attachment balloon busted, you know. That's what it is. And we've all got that mode. We don't say we're bipolar. We'd be very upset if someone said we're bipolar, you know. That's the way the Buddhist understanding of the mind works, you know. That the overexcited, many, many, many thoughts, and they're all kind of exciting and wonderful. Do this and this and now this and I have this and fix this. You understand? That's attachment mind. The way they talk about in meditation, the way Buddhism would talk, the two main obstacles, the type of meditation where you're trying to get really focused, you know, because Buddha would say we need to do this. To really begin to work on this mind of ours, we need a very focused, sharp, honed mind, controlled mind. And the type of meditation called concentration meditation is a technique to enable us to do that. Now, the two main obstacles to achieving concentration are the overexcited mind, and then the other one, like the depressed, kind of dull, or more like a sleepy mind, you know. But the overexcited one is the major one for us, and that is attachment. Attachment energy, if you like. Lots and lots of kind of overexcited thoughts about things, and makes all happy, 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 you know. But sort of this kind of manic happiness. That's happiness of attachment. When things will look fantastic and gorgeous and wonderful, and the new this and the new that, or the holiday or the vacation or the going here or the gorgeous boyfriend, and all overexcited, you know. That's when attachment gets what it wants. That's what happens. And then after a while, because it's an exaggeration, and this is where we learn to understand a bit the understanding of attachment, the way Buddha talks about it. one of the characteristics of attachment in this case, attachment, is that when it's in relation to that object, whether it's the chocolate cake or the holiday or the whatever it might be, this attachment, it's seeing it, this attachment is causing us to see the thing as more delicious, more exciting, more wonderful than it really is. Now this is clear to us when we think of addiction. You know, like your whole life depends upon getting your cigarettes. It's obviously a distortion, it's an exaggeration of a cigarette, isn't it? It's clearly not the function of a cigarette. In the end we can see, it destroys you, you know. So attachment exaggerates the deliciousness of the object, which is why the mind gets overexcited. It's so clear when we think of it, you know, that when we have this attachment, this addiction, and Buddha would say it's across the board with all of us, then it's clear we're like bound up, we're like enslaved, you know. It's obvious. When I was having my 80 Marlboros a day, it was obvious I was enslaved. Everything, you know, was centered around whether I had enough cigarettes, you know. Midnight would come, you'd have your cigarettes, you've got to go find them. I mean, it was like your mind wasn't free for a minute, you know. Even you physically weren't free for a minute. It's obvious that the more attachment, the less freedom. So this is really very, again, relevant to the Buddhist approach. Like I said, this word nirvana simply means freedom, simply, from the suffering. It means you really are liberated. You are really your own person. You are not confined by whether you have this or that or this or that, or whether people like you or you have a job or people think you're the right person or the right color or the right shape, whether you're living in the right country. I mean, all this stuff, our attachment goes to extraordinary degrees, you know. But we just think it's normal life. We don't realize that we're like bound up like slaves, you know, to a million different things. And so, and you check yourself, we can see it, the moment one of them goes, this fear arises, panic, you know, or anger or depression. So then the manipulation comes, then all this. I mean, it's clear, extraordinary suffering. We're not free at all, internally free at all, you know. It's clear to us. But what's interesting, as I said, we think it's normal life. Well, this is just how life is, we think. Sure, it's how life is, but the Buddhist view is we don't need to be like this. We can be free of this. And if you want to look at what Buddhist practice is, it's exactly this. It's this job, this psychological job of ridding our own minds from all these misconceptions, all these delusions, you know. The fundamental one being this attachment, this addiction mind to the million different things. Attachment, you know, it's like this attitude, this one of attachment is limitless. Actually, in its limitless in its capacity to find things or concepts or people or whatever to kind of glom onto, you know, to depend upon, to become addicted to be attached to be needy about, to manipulate to get, and all of this, you know. So in fact, the more attachment we have, Buddha says, the more, and therefore the more anger, jealousy, pride or whatever, the less freedom and the more suffering. This is what suffering is, Buddha says. This is the way he talks about suffering. Buddha talks about suffering in different levels. You know, when you look at the Four Noble Truths, this little packaging of this way of presenting Buddha's teachings. The first one is, he's talking about how there is suffering. The third one is sort of the uplifting one. It says, you can be free of suffering. So if it's true, we need to know what suffering is. And he defines it in three different ways. The first kind is what we all tend to mean by suffering, isn't it? Tend to mean by suffering is obvious, the gross level of suffering. The gross level, even of addiction, or being depressed, or people harming us, or being in a war zone, or being very sick. That's gross, obvious suffering, you know? But the second kind of suffering is not what we think of as suffering at all. It's what we mean by happiness, in fact. Which makes it rather depressing to think that what we mean by happiness is what he calls suffering. You know? And so what this particular one is, when we analyze this one, this is what we're discussing here. It's being bound up in attachment. So he calls it the suffering of change, which is sort of rather curious, but it's very easy to see it when I explain. The second level of suffering, which is what we mean by happiness, he calls it the suffering of change. And the scenario would be this business of the chocolate cake, you know. There's this delicious chocolate cake. Totally believe, oh wow, there's amazing chocolate cake. And believing in our heart that when I get it, I'll get happy. You know, isn't it? So whether it's the chocolate cake or the divine body or the new job, you name whatever it is that our attachment believes that when I get it, I'll get happy. And you check, that's how we define happiness in our life. You check, we mean that. You check, happiness for us in our life, look at our life. Happiness for us is what we get when we get what we want, isn't it? So happiness is what we think we'll get when we get the chocolate cake. Happiness is what we'll get when we get that nice man, the job, the clothing. You get my point, or whatever it might be. you know. Oh, now that person who's addicted, way over there, happiness for them is getting the alcohol. You see my point? So it's the same principle though. So Buddha would say, this is nothing, this whole mode of what we call happiness is actually suffering because of the way we get it, which is following attachment. And therefore, and he says actually it's nothing other than suffering, because chocolate cake inevitably, inexorably, once you start eating it, you know, we're thinking we're eating it and we're waiting for the pleasure to come, isn't it? We have another mouthful. Waiting for that happiness to come, isn't it? It triggers some pleasure. It's definite, doesn't it? The contact with that object definitely triggers some pleasure. And clearly, some objects, like bodies, trigger more pleasure than the chocolate cake, depending on the person. You understand my point? So, you know, clearly, that's the mode we have of getting happiness. And the belief system, and that just sounds very strange because we don't think we have a belief system. We think we're intelligent people. You know, but it's a belief system, Buddha says. It's not based on anything factual. The belief system is that that's the source of my happiness. And that's why, you check, we spend our lives manipulating the outside world to get all the things in place. The chocolate cakes, the bodies, the this, the job, the clothing, the handbag, whatever it might be. You understand? We're manipulating non-stop to get what it is in our life. Not to mention the more subtle levels, which is to get our people to agree with our views and all this kind of thing. Attachment, that's all. Then that's what we mean by happiness, and we truly do believe, it is a belief system for us, that when I get this, this, and this, and this, and this, then I'll be happy. So this is what we spend all our lives pursuing, isn't it? It's clear. So why is it called suffering, and why is it called suffering of change? Because it's very clear. When you start eating that cake, you know, in the pursuit of the pleasure, look what happens in the end. Every time you do it, it's always the same. You keep eating it, hoping, isn't it? Somehow, you think about it, hoping that next mouthful will bring you that, somehow that satisfaction that's like that end of the rainbow that's just kind of, you never quite get it. So and eventually, why do you stop eating? You check. It's not because you found happiness, which sounds rather silly. It's because you got too full. And if you kept eating that chocolate cake, it would become truly disgusting, wouldn't it? It really would. There's no question. It would eventually make you vomit. It would be so repulsive. So that's clearly what he means by the suffering of change. It changes from what we think is happiness and to something completely disgusting. Now, if you look at all the objects we have, what we call the causes of our happiness, you analyze what happens when you first get your new handbag. Or whatever the object might be. It looks so delicious in the beginning, doesn't it? So exciting. New, you keep looking at it. So nice, you want to use it and open it up and look at it, and so pleasing. You understand my point? You knew anything. Your new boyfriend. You can't keep your hands off him. You can't keep your eyes off him. He's so delicious. It's painful to be separate from him, isn't it? But it's not very long before you check the two options, when attachment starts to deflate, you either become bored, right? Or you have aversion for him or the handbag. Or he becomes horrible now, disgusting to you. Just like the chocolate cake. You hear my point here? We all can see this is what happens all the time. All the time. So it's rare for us. Even when we have a good relationship, but we also love the person. Now Buddha would say love is this delight in their happiness. That's not attachment. That's an altruistic, that's a marvelous state of mind. That's what we're trying to develop in relation to people, let's say. We also have the attachment, the neediness, the expectation, the dependence upon, their being there, saying the right thing, doing the right thing, you know, all of this. We have all that. And that attachment also brings all the energy, the overexcitement, and it's so gorgeous and divine, it triggers all the pleasure, like the first moment of a chocolate cake, you know. So you keep having contact with it, more contact, more, and then the arguments start, and the misery starts, right. And then it becomes something disgusting, so you throw him out for a new model, right. You have to stop having contact, it's too painful. Or you wake up one morning and look at him and you can't believe how boring he looks. So boredom takes over, right? And again, you get another model. Isn't it? Or if there is some love there, then the attachment dies down and you can live without him for a day, but you do want him to be happy. And that's what will sustain a relationship, you know, if it's a good one. There'll be some love there and that can begin to grow now, which is affection, you know. So we can see. So this attachment is that overexcited one, the neurotic one, the needy one, the dependent one. And it's the fantasy one. That's the point. It has this huge aspect, the way Buddhism would describe it, but if we look at it, we can see it's true, of exaggerating the power, the beauty, the benefit, or whatever, of something. So this is one of the interesting characteristics. that Buddha would attribute to all the unhappy states of mind. They have this particular characteristic of exaggerating, of distorting the thing. So when there's an aversion in the mind for somebody, they appear more ugly than they really are. So you have anger towards them, aversion for them. You see them as horrible, as the cause of your suffering. When you have attachment for somebody, you see them as divine. And always can only be depressed or angry when they don't, when we can't get them, because what we're expecting, that thing is incapable of giving it. The expectation we have is not equal to what the thing can give. The enormous expectation that cake, you know, we don't think, oh, I want the cake to make me happy. But when you analyze it, that's what we're doing. So we, in other words, this attachment, because it's not accurate in its assessment of the thing, the person, the whatever, therefore, because it brings enormous expectation and manipulation, it can only lead to disappointment. It can only lead to disappointment. This is simply the suffering of change. This is the bipolar mode, up and down, you know, 1,000 times a day. And it's because of attachment. So attachment, I mean, when you hear about the Buddhist model of the mind, Buddhist psychology, it can sound very simplistic. You know, we think we're so sophisticated in the West, we wear our ADDs and everything. I mean, it's like Buddha just sounds, he just talks about attachment, anger, pride, jealousy, you know, there's all these old kind of emotions we have. We think, oh yeah, you know. But I mean, it's extremely actually sophisticated. It's how he goes into them each, how he discusses the characteristics of the unhappy states of mind, the positive states of mind, how they function, how we develop them, how we can change them. It's extremely sophisticated, actually. And the only way to really give it this, you know, life, if you wish, is not just by hearing about it, but by looking inside, which is the real meaning of meditation. Knowing ourselves, really becoming our own therapists. Not a joke, you know. As Lama Yeshe said, I can tell you about attachment for one whole year. You'll never begin to understand it until you look deeply into your own mind, building something up in there, you know. And this is what takes time, actually. So just be going off to some psychiatrist, getting diagnosed ADD and taking your drug. It will help some symptom, there's no doubt. But that's not the solution. And this is why in the West we're not getting any happier. We're just getting more unhappy. The more drugs, the more diseases, the more unhappiness. Not joking. Look at it, you know. Until we start looking in here and beginning to unravel the chaos of my own emotions, knowing what is there, labeling the different parts, understanding their function, knowing myself deeply and well, then the job of beginning to change. This is what, you know, Buddha would say, because what Buddha's saying, again, remember, we have this phenomenal potential. And he's not talking, when he talks nirvana, it all sounds holy up there in the sky somewhere. Please, he is talking psychologically. Do not think he's not. It's just that I would say, probably, his understanding, his way of talking psychologically, of our capabilities psychologically, he goes to much deeper levels than we would ever imagine, you know, in my opinion, way of saying it. He would say we have this phenomenal potential to be free of suffering. Don't mishear his words. Don't hear it as some religious trip. And he means by working on your mind, because the causes of suffering are right here, and they are called attachment, and then therefore anger, jealousy, depression, you name it. This is the job of a Buddhist, actually. It's something extremely down to earth. But I think because we're so used to hearing it couched in these religious terms, you know, and we do, you know, you come to a Buddhist center, it sounds like religion, doesn't it? But actually, we're talking psychology, so how he talked about it. How he talked about it back then, that's all. He's talking about the human mind, nothing more. So the amazing first point is this potential that he says we have. And he's also saying, which is an outrageous concept for the West, you know, that actually, and he talks very much about the mind and its nature and what it really is, okay? What the human being really is, right? So what he would say, which is quite contrary to most religious assertions, right, is that actually the positive qualities, and we all know those, love, compassion, kindness, wisdom, generosity, all the good qualities that we know when we hear those words, what they refer to. We know that the good stuff, whether we've got them in ourselves or whether we're on the receiving end. Buddha would say that they are at the core of our being. They are at the core of our being. They are who we really are. They are the things that, and also are the, that when they are developed, which is the job, you know, a person who's being a Buddhist, this is our job, to develop those parts of ourself. That's what happiness is. It's so simple, actually. It's almost embarrassing, you know. But a person who's happy, you analyze it, not the overexcited bipolar addiction happy, which is the happy we have now, meaning not the happiness of when you get the object, which has to end up in misery when the object goes away. That's the conclusion. That's the implication, isn't it? But the happiness that Buddha says that we are capable of is happiness that is really stable, but is not dependent, addicted to, not dependent upon something being there. And that's simple words, but kind of hard to get our head wrapped around because we're so used to this other way of thinking about happiness. It's as being something we get when we get what we want. But what happiness is in Buddha's terms is a person who's happy in a genuine way, a stable way, is a person who's kind, a person who's generous, a person who's patient, a person who's forgiving. They're the qualities that are prevalent in the mind of a person who is happy. And that happiness is stable. That happiness is not happiness that's dependent upon whether a person smiles at you, which is the happiness we have now, which is the happiness of that particular junky mode, addicted mode, you know? The one needing to be seen by others. And that really is the main addiction we all have. The major one, the hardest one to see, the deepest one in our bones is this one, you know? It's the one that's related to our very self. Again, you analyze in this life. What we mean by happiness in relation to oneself is when others like me, when I'm seen as a good person, when I have a good reputation, when I'm considered in my field to be good, all these things. Then we think, well, you know, that's happiness. Now look at the reverse. Look when you lose your reputation, what happens? Mental breakdown, devastation, complete loss of a sense of self, isn't it? Because that sense of self we've had has been bolstered in such an artificial way by so many things out there. So of course we're going to have to manipulate frantically to keep those things there, isn't it? If our very sense of self is dependent upon them, which indeed it is. But the Buddha says that's mental suffering. That's what he calls suffering. And this is coming from attachment. Lama Yeshe was sort of said one time, it's like we're all schizophrenic, you know, and he's sort of talking loosely. You know, really, and this is the way Buddhism would say, the more we understand this attachment, this neediness, it is actually the very way, as I said, that we even define our sense of self in terms of getting these things. In other words, if there are people out there smiling and saying, Rabina, you're a nice person, I have to think, wow, I must be a nice person. So of course, and this is the thing too, attachment is the symptom. No, yes, it brings, it's coming from, okay? Attachment itself in turn is actually a symptom of an even more profound delusion in the mind. Delusion is a good word they use in Buddhism. And that is this one to do with this very sense of self. You could say this wrong sense of self we have with this dualistic, schizophrenic sense of self that is somehow only is existent in dependence upon stuff out there reflecting back at me. So I'm hopeless if no one else likes me. Completely depressed, you know, when someone gives us up, isn't it? I'm feeling fantastic if someone likes me. Now what Buddha's saying is, who I am has got nothing to do with who likes me. You know, a person liking me or not liking me has got nothing to do with me. But this is so shocking to us, we can't even hear it, you know. Who I am is who I am. It's something here. It's here, you know. And they're my qualities. That's who I am. Whether someone else likes it, that's their business. But you look how that seems so cruel almost, because our whole life is dependent upon mostly this one, of having someone love me, someone reaffirm me, someone keep smiling at me to remind me I must be a real person, you know, because we don't know until this happens. This is the deepest addiction of all, and this is the deepest cause of our suffering. Because look at the mental breakdown when a person rejects you. It's an obvious sign of this addiction. When the person leaves you, you know, it is truly devastating, isn't it? Because we have utterly dependent upon that person's liking me for my very sense of self, for my value, for my worth, for my very existence. Look at us. So we say, oh, that's normal. Buddha says, excuse me, it's mental illness. You know, mental illness. Not joking. So it's hard, we can kind of hear it, but it's hard to hear it because it's everybody feels it and it's totally spontaneous in us. You know, mummies didn't have to teach us this, you know. And all this points to is the way Buddha talks of how deeply ingrained these misconceptions, as he calls them, delusions, unhappy emotions are, you know. So, you know, quite a decent job. It's quite a big job to transform ourselves into the amazing person that Buddha says we can be. Which, you know, again, simply speaking, is the person who has developed these positive qualities. And equally, of course, absolutely, having removed the pollution, removed the negative ones. And that's also an interesting point. What we think is just normal, natural life, Buddha would say, are symptoms. They're like additions to our mind. They don't belong. Attachment, anger, pride, depression, low self-esteem, all these things, all these ADDs, they are not at the core of our being. They are not at the core of our being, which is a big surprise to us because it feels like they are the ones that seem natural. They seem to come so spontaneously. Everybody seems to have them. It's just the way the world is. I mean, look at the world, you know. But this is Buddha's point, and this takes time to look at, to try to get a sense for this. That the positive qualities are actually what are natural to us. Natural in the sense of when they're all there, prevalent, things work beautifully. You're more content, your relationships are good, so everything works, you know. When the attachment and the anger and the fear and the pride and the jealousy are prevalent, it's like a nightmare. Look at it. For me, my relationships, the world. So they're the ones that are unnatural in this sense, that they cause trouble. They're a mess. And they're not at the core of our being. This is crucial to the understanding of the way Buddha presents, you know, and therefore the implication of this for practice is quite huge. If we can get some sense of who I really am, is my positive qualities, who I really am, where my potential exists, which can be developed, is in my positive qualities, my kindness, my wisdom, my love, my compassion, my generosity, my patience, my intelligence, my wisdom. The development of these and the lessening of the attachment, the anger, the fears, pride, jealousy, low self-esteem is what will bring me extraordinary fulfillment, happiness, joy for myself and therefore clearly in turn in my relationships will benefit others, you know. This is the core, this is the heart of Buddhist practice actually. This is the job. It's completely psychological. It's just that, you know, if we looked at the Buddhist view of how far we can develop this stuff, these positive qualities, it's way beyond what we would ever think possible. And how far we can get rid of the garbage, it's quite shocking to us. Because in our culture, you know, we totally assume that a normal person, you know, is made up of some anger, some jealousy, some depression, some anxiety, some love, some compassion, and as long as it's nicely balanced, then you're a nicely rounded, balanced human being, you know. It's a Buddhist view, that's like saying you've got a glass full of water that's also full of pollution. And as long as the pollution isn't too bad, then that's a decent glass of water, you know. How depressing, Buddha would say. Like, talk about shortchanging ourselves, you know? So really in this sense you can see Buddha is far more radical in his assertion of what we are capable of psychologically, emotionally. He's outrageous, in fact, in what he really says we're capable of, you know? So it's an interesting thing to think about. And I think it's a very uplifting thing to think that we don't, you know, the view we tend to have is, well, we're all born this way, I just got born this way, it's nothing to do with me, it's not my fault, what can I do, you know, kind of like what to do, throw your hands in the air, hope for the best, cross your fingers, you know. And as we can all see too, in our lives, in our education, you know, you don't go to school and then learn a course on how to be less angry. Now, there's a bit more, you know, you do anger management courses, things like, it's a bit more prevalent, isn't it? But you know, we don't learn how to be less angry. You don't learn how to be more patient. You're supposed to kind of close your mouth and hope for the best. We're not given techniques. It's not part of our life. We're given techniques of how to be carpenters and pianists, you know, but not how to be less angry or more loving. It sounds dumb. It sounds rather silly, you know. And we think of it as, generally speaking, we think of all this stuff as hit and miss. And then if something really is serious, then you've got to go find a therapist who can help you put yourself together. Well, what Buddha says, we've got to start putting ourselves together from day one. It's our job. That's our main job. Not some peripheral job you do if something goes wrong, which is how we think of it in the West. Being your own therapist is what your job is, as far as Buddha's concerned. You know, so if you can imagine being brought up since the time you're born in an environment where people are looking at their own minds and dealing with them and having an assumption that their positive qualities are who they really are, the negative ones are just additives and don't belong and you can change them. Can you imagine how amazing we'd be now, you know? your relationships would only be beneficial. You wouldn't be neurotic. You'd be a very developed person. You'd be extremely courageous. And talk about free. My goodness, we'd really be free, you know. Not bound by all these things, just chaining us. This is a very real way to talk about it. I mean, we can see, you know, when we think of, I mean, especially when I'm thinking about people we work with in prison, you know, it's like that's the classic idea we have of not being free, when your body is enclosed somewhere in an ugly place and you're not allowed, you haven't got the choice to open the door. It's like a nightmare to us. But freedom is mental, there's no doubt, and I can see this again and again with the examples of people that we know who are really amazing in prison who are trying to practice finding freedom, as one of them wrote in a book he wrote, you know. And I think of one, again, it's always good to hear extreme examples. There's this one woman, I read about it, I don't know, I didn't meet her, she's not a Buddhist, she was on death row apparently, and she was innocent it seemed, and was released after 17 years. So there she was, innocent of this crime, on death row. So you can only imagine the suffering, you know, you can only imagine the mental suffering of the, and the frustration, the rage, the whole spectrum of experiences would be unbearable. I don't know her whole story, but reading something very quickly, she eventually, you know, first of all, out of her mind with rage in the beginning, but slowly started to read and then began becoming interested in yoga and then meditation to do with yoga. So she started to realize that, you know, the meaning of freedom. That as long as she was caught up in anger and frustration and expectations and unmet attachment, that's the one, unmet attachment. It's like a nightmare. Then totally she was not free. Totally she was paralyzed, in chain. You know, then she realized that, she said, she started practicing yoga. I decided, she said, I am not a prisoner. I am a monk. I am not in a cell. I am in a cave. And she also realized that her mind, this is what we're talking about, was her own. This was who she was. And this was the one thing that no one else could have power over. So she really became free. Just to hear this, you know, is outrageous to us. Because why? Because she changed her mind. She let go of her anger, her frustration, her pride, her fears, her resentment, her fury. I mean, she was right. She shouldn't have been in prison. Reality was she was in prison. So she changed her mind. Again and again, you know, it's so clear. When Lama Zopa Rinpoche wrote it's one I always quote, you know, wrote a birthday card, a 21st birthday card to one of these young Mexican ex-gangsters who, you know, was a Buddhist we were communicating with in prison. In his little cell all day, 23 hours a day, with 10 books, the inside of a pen, and that's it. No windows, no freedom, in other words. Enough to make us insane. Lama Zopa said to him, "Your prison is nothing in comparison with the inner prison of ordinary people. The prison of attachment, the prison of pride, the prison of anger, the prison of jealousy. This is the point that Buddha is making. This is the crux of Buddhist practice. This is what freedom is," Buddha says. He means that word, nirvana, freedom. He means this, not just some cute religious trip, you know. He's talking psychologically. This is what we're capable of. We are capable of being blissfully free. Free from jealousy, free from anger, free from attachment, free from fears, free from stress, free from anxiety, free from suffering. Buddha's not just rabbiting on. When we get religious, we go all kind of la-di-da when we hear this stuff. It's all sort of, wow, far out, special, spiritual. Load of rubbish. And we're talking full-on, in-your-face, hard mental work, you know. And it is possible. It's interesting, if we listen to we hear about the Dalai Lama's life, you kind of check all the suffering, you know, 1 million of the 6 million people, his own people, murdered, killed, whatever reasons, whatever, tortured, in prison. His country, 45 years later, destroyed, completely, more and more destroyed every day. People being killed, the wildlife being killed, the environment's being ruined. He's in exile. I mean, there's enough reason for him to be full of rage. Talk about unmet attachments, you know, if he had them. Completely overwhelming in frustration and anger, depression. Anyone can see he is not like that. Anyone can see, they read his books, they see him on the television, he's this happy, funny, delightful, practical, intelligent, light, clearly happy human being. Now we ought to ask the question, I wonder what it is he does, you know. So then we think, oh, he's a Buddhist, he likes his enemies, he must watch his breath nicely or something. I mean, it's so insulting, it's embarrassing, you know. I mean, not to, you know, other reasons too, due to the Buddhist philosophy of karma, but more than anything, he is the way he is because he has worked on his mind. Because he's not angry, and he's not jealous, he's not depressed, he's not got low self-esteem, he's not needy, he's not an addict. You know, therefore he's able, like that, you know, he's able to deal with the reality of the life. He is who he is, his own amazing person, regardless of the other things, you know. Now that's freedom in the most simple way. And this is what Buddha's talking about. This is the capability we have, you know. And it's mind-boggling. And it's as scary as hell, because it's the most difficult job to do. It is easy for us to mold this body into what any shape we like. But as Lama Zobo Rinpoche says, we can mold this mind into any shape we like. And that's the difficult job. Because we're all junkies to the methods we're using now, you know. Think that way. Which is to follow attachment, to follow depression, to follow blame, to follow anger. And we don't even know any other way because it seems like second nature to us, you know. So it's a tough job. It's the hardest job we will ever do, working on our minds. There's just no question, you know. Make money? Easy. Become a physicist? Easy. Change anger? Change your mind? The most difficult. But that's the one necessary job. Then everything else you get is like bonus. You know, really. Then, you know, you have a gorgeous husband, gorgeous lover, $1 million. That's like a bonus. Because if you have it, not have it, nothing much will change. That sounds pretty shocking to us. But that's the point. Then it's like you can, you know, take it or leave it. And then you have it, you really enjoy. And you don't have it, you're still okay. I mean, that's freedom. That's freedom, you know. And that's what Buddha's talking about. This is his way of talking. So, I mean, who wouldn't want this kind of freedom? My goodness. And it's interesting, if we look at the Buddhist way of talking about the mind, that the energy behind all of these unhappy states of mind is so interesting. It's fear. There's this wonderful New Age phrase, it's either love or fear. I tell you, that's really right on, you know. That's exactly how Buddha's talking. Fear is at the base of all these unhappy states of mind. You look at attachment, when it's so needy to get that person, to get that job, with that drink or that thing or that cake, especially the emotional neediness of a person, it's like the panic if you don't get, isn't it? The panic, it's like panic. Well, it's fear. Look at anger. If you analyze what's behind anger, you know, it's this absolute panic, isn't it? At the thought of this thing that is unbearable. It's like, have to make it go away. It's unbearable. It's fear. It's all fear. Jealousy. Behind it is fear. And this is the primordial one. The base even of attachment. The Buddhist psychological way of talking. This primordial wrong sense of self. It's like the energy of fear itself. All based on this sense of I. So the main voice of this one is I want, I need, in order to uphold this sense of I. This is why attachment is a symptom, it sounds curious, of low self-esteem. Or if you like, low self-esteem is a symptom of this attachment, actually. Because low self-esteem is, I am nothing unless I get that. Which is why we're so needy for this and needy for that and hungry for this, you know. In other words, we don't think we're anything unless I have someone saying, Rabina, you're nice. And attachment says, please, say it again. So we manipulate and say it again, you know. And they don't say it once, we freak out. Oh, you don't love me anymore? You know, so you've got to say it again and again. So that's the junkie mind. You're a bottomless pit of neediness, basically. Low self-esteem. Got to keep having the things smiling back at me, you know, to show me I must exist, like a mirror showing me. Because we don't think we are ourselves existing. That's low self-esteem, you know. We're all mentally ill, honestly. Just that we only think those people over there are mentally ill, you know. They're the ones over there, they're the junkies. They're the needy ones. They're the, you know, the ADD ones and those ones. I'm normal. Well, join the human race, Buddha says. We're all, it's just a question of degree, that's all. And that's a really good way to say it. It's just a question of degree, you know. If you get jealous, then, you know, you've got some mental illness. You got angry, you've got mental illness. You got pride, you've got mental illness. You got attachment, mental illness. This is it, for sure. So this is how Buddha talks. But we all recognize this stuff, don't we? I mean, it's not like it's, you know, in some secret Buddhist text you're going to find all this information. Just look at your life.